Charles Woodson, Desmond Howard, Denard Robinson, Timanga Biakabatuka, from Yost to Harbaugh, passed down from generation to generation, Michigan football has stood the test of time. What's that feeling you get when you catch your first glimpse of the big house? When you hear, "And take the field." When you see the team emerge from the tunnel, sprint across the field, and touch that famed M-Go Blue banner. Saturdays in the fall, tailgates with friends and family, favorite players, favorite teams, and unforgettable moments. A lifetime of memories. College football in 2020 may be unique, but it has arrived at the corner of Stadium and Main, which is where you can find Michael Spath and Justin Rowe sharing their analysis, their stories, and their emotions about this year's Wolverine. This is the Stadium and Main podcast, presented by Kapnick Insurance Group, Wolverine State Brewing Company, and Lewis Jewelers.
Welcome to the Stadium and Main podcast. My name is Justin Rowe, and I am here with Michael Spath. Michael, how are you doing today? It is November 6th, Friday, before the Michigan versus Indiana game. How are you feeling?
Well, if you would have told me, Justin, that we would know who the college football national champion is before we knew who our president was, I would have said, no way. But you know, the national championship, we have specific dates. We know that it's taking place in January 1st or so. The presidential election, we have no idea when these states are going to finish counting all of their mail-in ballots. So, I'm doing well. It's a gorgeous week here in Southeast Michigan. We've had, higher than normal temperatures. We've had a lot of sun. Got a great run in through the Arboretum yesterday. So I'm feeling better about things. And again, we talked about this on Thursday's podcast. I'm excited about the game this weekend because it should answer a lot of our questions. It should let us know, what type of coaches, Michigan has. It should let us know what type of players, the attitude, the mentality that these guys have. I mean, they've been getting their ass kicked all week by the media, mm-hmm. by fans. Do they stay down? I mean, how much does that piss them off? Do they come back with everything that they've got and say, hey, this was not a reflection of who we are as a football team. This was, I don't want to say an anomaly, because you coming out flat against your rival, you getting punched in the mouth by Michigan State, a team that you're favored by 3.5 touchdowns. Like, that's not an anomaly. Like, that is part of who you are. That's the part that Jim Harbaugh says you have to own it, because, this is – you guys lost. Like, you guys didn't come out and play your best football. You guys didn't have an attitude and an intensity to you. But at the same time, like, now that they have been – they're getting dragged through the mud, everybody is pointing. Everybody on the national level is kind of laughing. Everybody is mocking Michigan. Like, what do the players and coaches do with that? Does that really piss them off? And all of a sudden, I think the word you used earlier in the season was like galvanized. Like, do they come together, or do they just fall apart and crush under the weight of all of this, this negativity and criticism? So I'm really curious to see what that looks like tomorrow.
Yeah. And again, we don't want to get into, or just keep harping on the Harbaugh thing. And is it his last game? Is it, all this stuff, which obviously you and I both don't think that's
his
true,
last game. I mean, there's no way it's his last game.
I didn't mean to say his last game. I'm saying, I guess his on his way out. I think more so it's just like you said, it's, can Harbaugh and this team rally around each other? Can he turn it around so quickly and get this team to actually move in a forward progress spot? Because what we talked about earlier this year was, what you wanted to see from this team was progress going into 2021. And right now it seems like it's a big step backwards. And so I think it's on Harbaugh and it's on this coaching staff and these players to actually buy in. And it looked like after the Minnesota game, Everybody was bought in, and then last week it looked completely opposite. So this week I'm looking to see if this team has any fight, if they are coming out there, and if they do go down in the first quarter at some point, can they fight back like they did against Minnesota? That's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for some changes, some adjustments. I'm looking for some leadership from somebody, you know, in this program, because it doesn't seem like the last week there was anybody that was, you know, taking everybody by the reins and hey, this is my team, this is our team, let's go get it. We're not going to let this happen. So that's what I'm.
Yeah, I mean, Justin, weren't we just talking about – I mean, we were just talking about Joe Milton as a guy who gets the best out of his teammates and a steady influence in the whole thing. But really what we're talking about earlier on the season and what Jim Harbaugh said, and I always – you know, he says it. Coaches always talk about, like, we got really good leadership on this team. But, like, this is the moment where that leadership gets tested. Like, and first of all, it got tested last week, and then it failed. You know, because the leaders, if you've really got something special to the team, you don't lose last week's football game. I'm sorry. Like, we can chalk it up any which way. You can talk about how Mel Tucker surprised. But if you've got really good leadership, like, that leadership, you know, finds a way, first of all, to have the guys prepared. Second of all, once they've gotten, you know, hit, to come back stronger, and they didn't. And so I'm questioning whether they have leadership, really good leadership on this team. And again, that's something we're going to find out tomorrow against Indiana. And you know what, Justin, too, I wonder about this. I mean, we can all say that as Michigan fans, you know, this season doesn't mean as much to us anymore after they lost to Michigan State, that we're all checked out. But when you, I mean, those are the feelings that you have on Sunday and Monday and Tuesday. By the time you get towards the weekend and college, the next week of college football is on the horizon, I think almost all of us tend to have some level of butterflies, anticipation, excitement. Now, we might be tempering that with expectations of, like, hey, not expecting them to win, not expecting to see massive changes on both sides of the ball like we need to. But you're still excited. You're still ready for the weekend. You're still ready for more Michigan football. And you're just kind of preparing yourself that, hey, this one may not go down the way that I'm hoping it will. And if so, there's going to be some more consequences off of that. But let me ask you this, Justin. There's been a lot of rumors, a lot of, you know, Jim Harbaugh even kind of intimating at it. If you read message boards, read Twitter, there's supposedly some, you know, at least one major injury on this Michigan football team. Do you expect to see a different lineup tomorrow when they take on Indiana?
Yeah, from what I have heard is that Jalen Mayfield unfortunately suffered a high ankle sprain, and he is probably going to be out for at least 6 weeks here, which is in an 8-week season. It's already week three. Not looking great for Jalen Mayfield to come back. So I think that we're going to see a different offensive line. I think that between him being not being there and just maybe some shakeups from Ed Warner just because of the lack of production from last week, I think we'll see a different lineup on the line, which is very concerning to me because once Jalen Mayfield did go down last week, it seemed like that line was pretty lost. So I'm interested to see what goes on the offensive line. I'm interested to see what happens in the defensive backfield as well. We saw Jalen Perry and some other guys step in at the end of the game. I think that Dom Brown was trying to, you know, switch it up and see what happens, because obviously what he was doing was not working. But I think that we'll see a different rotation in the secondary as well. Are there any other positions that you might see some different rotations in?
Well, I think, I mean, not really. I think you hit the big ones, obviously. You know, who is the right tackle in this week's game? You know, I think we're probably going to see a new left guard, Chuck Filiaga, all the excitement, for him, a redshirt junior, this big, strong, massive guy from Texas has kind of dissipated in 2 weeks. You know, he really struggled in that game against Michigan State. He wasn't alone. So he shouldn't be, you know, solely singled out by the coaching staff and by the fans and the media. But, I think if you're looking at that lineup, he's one of those ones where you could just plop him out and put somebody new in there. And then, you know, receiver, no. Running back, no. I mean, that's going to be, you know, our question yesterday. Do you start narrowing this down? You and I are both in agreement that Hassan Haskins and Blake Corum should probably be the guys who are each getting, you know, somewhere between 12 and 15 touches. And Zach Charbonnet, you know, it's other than the 70-yard run. I mean, what is his total? And I can look this up here, but.
Yeah, I believe he has total? 73 yards on the season after that 70-yard run.
And he's probably had at least like 7 or 8 more carries.
Right. I think it was 10 or 11, I think, if I saw that correctly.
So I'm pulling it up right here. So, yeah, so he's had 8 other carries go for 3 yards this season. I mean, that's not who Zach Charbonnet is, but something is amiss there, right? So, you know, what do you have to – like, so I don't know that he merits getting – a ton of looks right now, unless they're going to use him in a different way or unless they're going to block better up front. So I don't expect to see that a change. Quarterback, obviously not. Front four, no, I don't expect any changes. Obviously the linebacker position, if Michael Barrett is still banged up, if Cam McGrone is still banged up, you could see other linebackers in there. Not a great time for Michigan going into week 3 to already be this banged up. The secondary is going to be really interesting because Jim Harbaugh earlier in the week said that Vincent Gray's this guy. Vincent Gray is the best cornerback on this team. Vincent Gray is who he's going to stick with. And so if that's the case, you expect to see number 4 out there in a starting role tomorrow. But, Justin, how long does he have? I mean, if after the first quarter he's given up a big gain and has a pass interference, like, aren't you required as a coaching staff to pull him? I mean, and I don't want to write this kid off because he's a redshirt sophomore. You know, he's still only making, I think this, he had 4 starts last year, so he's in his only his 7th starting position. You know, seems like a great kid, works really hard, but if you can't get the job done, you can't get the job done, and they've got to go with somebody else. So that'll be something that people are definitely keeping an eye on really early on in this game. So Justin, you know how every company has those, you know, those guys, you know, or the, you know, whoever those employees are, right, that just kick ass and are the glue that holds everybody together. Like every single person in the company counts on them to help them out with every little thing. And you know, they're like an all-star, you just know it. So the person today we're going to talk to from Captic Insurance Group, one of our sponsors, is Jacob Cooper, who is exactly that type of person. Jacob, welcome to the Stadium of Maine podcast.
Good morning.
Sort of that, was that an apt description? I know you're a humble guy, and so you're probably laughing a little bit, but I didn't know how to describe you. I mean,
you know, I was chuckling a little bit. I obviously appreciate the introduction, but, you know, I think it comes with the team nature here at Catnick and how we all get to work together that makes it look like I'm a little more successful here than I really am.
Well, you just – so Coop, explain a little bit of the team nature. I mean, I think that's one of the things that I really appreciate about working with Catnick so far is, you know, there's so many things that Catnick does well, and they don't ask – they ask pretty much every person to be really good at one thing maybe – but then to be able to like chip in with everybody else so that if I don't, you know, for instance, yesterday I was talking to someone who owns his own business, who's asking about insurance as an investor. Like that's not my area of specialty, but there's so many people in the company that I can go to talk about like, hey, can you help me out a little bit as I talk to this particular person?
Yeah, you know, absolutely. I think that's, you know, the part that Catnick excels at is having so many different professionals and just industry experts that can answer any question. I mean, whether you've got, you know, a super small business on Main Street or a Fortune 500 company, you know, we've got an entire team of 170 professionals behind us supporting you and your business. You know, I mean, particularly in the Main Street area where I work, you know, even on the smaller accounts, when we've got 6 people behind the scenes, you know, all hands on deck, making sure that every single request and need is properly addressed.
So that's the area that you and I are both in. We're both in Main Street, which is, you know, we're aiming to work with essentially almost like every town in America has a Main Street, right? And here in Washtenaw County, downtown Ann Arbor does, and Saline does, and Chelsea does, and Dexter, and Brighton, and Ypsilanti, all these things have a downtown. And most of those businesses, because they're more charming, the downtowns, they're more walkable. We're not talking about these huge factories. We're not talking about these huge, you know, 10-story, you know, 500,000 square feet. We're talking about the smaller businesses. And Coop, right now, small businesses has been such a big focus in our country because of the pandemic. And these are the people that you and I are specifically geared towards working with and helping them meet all of their needs.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I feel like I'm a politician to say this, but, you know, the small business world really is the backbone of our country. And, you know, I mean, throughout the pandemic, we've seen how important they are to the economy and what impacts they have. You know, and luckily I really enjoy the Main Street space here at Katnick and getting to work with those small businesses, because I think it's just so much more meaningful and you're providing such a service. You know, I mean, when you get into the larger businesses, it's great too. But when you're working with these Main Street accounts, you're working with somebody who's just passionate about their business and they're doing what they love. And, you know, we just get to support on the back end of that.
Well, what I really appreciate too is, I mean, a small business, as you and I both well know, I mean, the margins are smaller, you know, like they're a lot of times, like they're struggling. They're just trying to survive, especially right now during a pandemic. And so Coop, I mean, one of the most important things that you and I can do is to make sure that they've got the insurance coverage that they need, and that they're in the right, you know, they're paying the right amount. Like sometimes they are underinsured, but we just want to take a look at and help you look at your policies and say like, okay, can we move some things around right now? Help you guys out a little bit. And just act as consultations, because we don't represent the insurance carrier. Like that's the big thing. Like some of those companies out there, they work for State Farm, they work for Allstate, they work for the insurance carrier. We don't work for the insurance carrier. We work for the client.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, I couldn't have said it better myself. You know, I mean, it's a matter of making sure that they have the right coverages, but they're paying the right premium. And you know, there's all sorts of carriers out there, and there's a good chance to find a better placement for them if possible.
Well, Coop, I know you said that you're not a huge sports fan or not a huge football fan, so I won't put you on the spot with a prediction for the weekend or a prediction for the election, since we're still here waiting to see what happens. But man, I hope that you have a great weekend. You know, people can reach out to you. As I said, I mean, you're like that glue person who holds everybody together. And at the same time, I mean, you are, you know, a client executive too, where you can sell to people. And so if someone wants to reach out to you, you know, the one thing I figured out so far is like, anytime I have a question that I don't know the answer to, like call up Coop, send Coop an email, and he's going to have something for me. So you can reach out to him at jacob.cooper@capnick.com. Coop, have a great weekend, man.
Thanks. You as well. Thanks, Michael.
A little bit of our predictions on Friday. Does either one of these coordinators have a much better performance than they did a week ago? Because both Josh Gattis and Don Brown, there's no letting either one of them off the hook for Michigan State game. They both had a miserable performance as a coordinator. Guessed wrong for their game plan to start, slow to adjust, to the point where you could argue that Josh Gattis, as the offense coordinator, never adjusted in the game. Don Brown did, but by then it was too late. So does either one of these guys against Indiana go out there and have a much better performance as a coordinator?
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say I think that Josh Gattis will. I think he has so many weapons on this offensive side that he has more options than Don Brown does. I think that he has a play calling, you know, a playbook that he can open up to just about anything here. So that's why he'll be able to adjust. And he's shown that he can adjust. Obviously, he didn't do it last week, but he's shown in the past that he can adjust and do some different things. And so I think, you know, outside of the inside zone is really what hurt him last week. He just wouldn't stop running that for whatever reason. And so I think he's going to see that, and they're going to at least try with a different offensive line possibly to switch things up on running outside zone or running traps or using Ben Mason in some different places like they did in week one. So I think Josh Gattis will be able to see, you know, where they struggled and not try to throw the ball 50 times, but try and use Blake Corum out in the flats and use Ben Mason as well again. Maybe actually, in my opinion, he needs to open up that deep ball. And even if Joe Milton misses on the first couple in the first quarter, I use the analogy, it's just like a shooter going through a shooting drought. You have to keep shooting in order to get out of that. And so until Joe Milton actually gets in a rhythm and feels what it feels like to throw one of those deep balls on target, he's not going to do it. So if you just give him one shot and then you say, all right, we have to go away from that because he can't make that throw, he's never going to get into that rhythm. He's never going to feel it. So I think Josh Gattis has to just keep taking those shots until Joe Milton actually connects on one. And so I'm looking to see Giles Jackson, Roman Wilson, and those guys get some separation deep and let Joe Milton throw it. And I'm looking for Josh Gattis to switch it up on the offensive line and get this run game going any way he can, because it was obvious that Michigan's offense without the run game could not do much. Do you think that Dom Brown, do you agree with that on Josh Gattis? And do you think that Dom Brown can do the same, or do you think he's going to still be as stubborn as we've seen him be in the past?
No, I think when I look at Dom Brown on the defensive side of the ball, I don't think there's any way that he comes out in this game with man coverage and no deep safeties, no two deep safeties, or that he sticks in man coverage without zone. I would say if he does that, if he literally starts the game with the whole way that they played most of that first half without any help over the top for these cornerbacks, and they're in pretty strict man-to-man, then I don't know how he should be allowed on the bus after the game is over with, because that would be ultimate stubbornness, arrogance, and most all putting his team in the worst position to be successful. And like, you can deal with someone's stubbornness, you can deal with someone's arrogance, you can't deal with someone who puts their team in a position to essentially, you know, struggle and lose. That to me is a criminal offense. So I can't imagine we see the same thing from Don Brown this week against Indiana to start as we did against Michigan State to start. He's got to know the weaknesses. He's got to understand that he doesn't have corners right now that can cover one-on-one, especially on deep balls. And so he's got to offer safety help over the top. And then it does come down to execution. Brad Hawkins had a bad performance against Michigan State. He was never in a position to help over the top, even when he was being asked to do so. You know, Daxon Hill was on the slot, so he wasn't in the play. Makari Page, the true freshman, I mean, big time learning curve right now, and it's maybe a little bit unfair because he's three games into his career. But if he's the guy that's out there, he's the guy that's got to get the job done too. So I don't expect to see that with the defense. With the offense, I agree with you. I mean, I don't know what it looks like, how many opportunities you take down the field, but to me, it's like, look, you've got to probably throw the ball at least like 6 to 8 times down the field. And if you're falling complete on all 6 of them, I mean, that sucks, but you've got to try. And honestly, if they can't complete any deep ball and they throw at least 5 to 8 and they don't complete any of them, I mean, I don't know what to do with that, Justin. Then you're in serious trouble, because we've talked about it all offseason. We talked about it on earlier episodes. Everybody agrees that college football in 2020 is about the big play. And if you can't create any big plays with your strong arm quarterback and your super speedy wide receivers, then you've got, I mean, a major issue, not just for this season, but down the road too. So I expect them to take shots. I expect them to take, you know, the Athletic, I think, did an article about their first down, what they ran on first down and how they, I think it was like 7 of their 16 first downs were, actually 16 other first downs were runs, 7 of them went for 1 yard or less. Like, that's a pretty terrible position to be putting your quarterback behind the sticks, where it's now 2nd down and 10, 2nd down and 12, 2nd down and 9. Like, that's not a good place to be. So I expect them to throw the ball more on first down. One of the things I didn't see them do a whole lot of was on 2nd down, throw the ball deep. A lot of times when you get a position where it's like 2nd and 4 after you've had a nice play on first down, that's when you take a shot, because you're like, okay, I'm still in a manageable 3rd down situation if we don't get this. 3rd and 4, 3rd and 2. Let me take my shot downfield. And they didn't do that on Saturday. So I expect to see a lot more creativity. And if, again, I mean, Justin, it's this, if you don't see it, it's either because of stubbornness, or because they don't have it. And both of those would be really bad.
Let me ask you this too, because obviously, we talked about this. Michigan State kind of created the blueprint on how to stop Michigan's offense as well as exploit their defense. Do you see Indiana doing the same thing on defense against Michigan, where they kind of load everybody in and force Michigan to throw the ball? And then also on the offensive side for Indiana, are they just going to, you know, max protect and try and throw it up on the outside one-on-one?
Well, I don't know. I mean, obviously coaches, you know, Mel Tucker didn't look at Minnesota's game plan and say, hey, we're going to do the exact same thing. But then Minnesota's game plan didn't work. Michigan State's game plan worked, you know, effectively, I mean, ideally against the Wolverines. If you're Tom Allen, how do you not come back and say, we're at least for the first quarter, maybe for the first half, we're going to run the exact same philosophy at Michigan? Because here's the thing. It's not like throughout the game, Michigan adjusted. In the fourth quarter, hey, they had understood that Michigan State was still coming, you know, with both their middle linebackers on every play, and they showed that they could beat it, and they showed that, like, hey, we're not going to be stubborn. It's not like Don Brown and this Michigan defense fully adjusted in that game and showed that they had a counter punch. And so it's if you show that you have a counter punch, then you probably say, like, okay, we can't run this exact same stuff that Michigan State did, because they already know what they're going to do to combat us. But the fact that they went four quarters and couldn't figure it out, Justin, that to me says, yeah, absolutely, we're going to do this to start the game. Why would we not do this to start the game? We're going to go right at them the same way. We're going to make Joe Milton try to beat us with his arm, and we're going to throw the ball deep against these cornerbacks. And if at halftime it hasn't worked, okay, now we have something in our back pocket, our plan B. But why would you go to plan B when plan A was so damn effective last week against Michigan State?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think that you at least have to try that if you're Tom Allen and take a look, especially with Michael Penix, who has been very effective with his arm. And I was actually very surprised to see that he has not done much with his legs. He's a very mobile quarterback, but if you look at his statistics throughout two games, he has not done much with his legs. It's really been all with his arm. So I was expecting to you know, maybe have Michigan struggle against a mobile quarterback and have to spy him, but it doesn't look like that's Indiana's game plan with Michael Penix. But instead, they're going to try and throw the ball, which again doesn't fare very well for the Michigan secondary, because obviously they have not succeeded against that. So let me ask you this. So with Michael Penix there and him doing well, do you see Michael Barrett, and do you see this front seven and the linebackers, Cam McGrone, do you see them trying to get to him like they did to Tanner Morgan? Or do you see them kind of dropping back a little bit and like you said, having, you know, multiple safeties back there or in trying to kind of dare him into throwing the ball?
Now, see, this is to me is probably one of the most interesting subplots of the defense. Is last week, I mean, you saw how effective Quiddy Pay was and Aiden Hutchinson and even the interior of the defensive line getting after Tanner Morgan in week one. You saw Michael Barrett with the success that he had. You saw, you know, Cam McGrone create pressure. Michigan State, max protect, seven guys into block six. And what did you get? You didn't get that pressure. And so, you know, this is a defensive coordinator's worst nightmare when a team max protects, because it's really hard to get home. Mm-hmm. You know, your defensive ends are now finding themselves being blocked by a tackle and somebody helping them out on the outside. And the interior, the three linemen can focus on two, but they can also focus in on the linebackers coming. The running back is there to help with the linebackers coming. Like, this makes it really difficult. And so, you know, what do? You have to come up with more complex schemes. You have to really pick your spots. Your players have to be really good understanding where gaps are. And so if you're Michael Barrett or you're the Viper, you know, and you're designed to line up, you know, one place, but you've got to find a way. Okay, is this a moment here where I can split these two guys? Do I need to try to go around them? You know, obviously the stunting is called usually on the sideline by the coaches. But if you're going to stunt, like, you've got to get home on those stunts when you confuse them. That's the big thing, is like, there's not going to be as many opportunities when you're going against a max protection scheme to get home, but there's going to be a couple because teams still screw up and teams still have some miscommunication. And in those moments, you have to get home. And so you almost have to have like a perfect 100% when that crease arrives. And that's not an easy thing to do. So I'm really curious to see what he does, if he has more zone blitz, if he does just drop those guys in his own coverage. And now Michael Penix Jr., you know, here's how you can counter it. If you all of a sudden you're looking out and there's like seven guys in coverage, and you don't really know where to go with the football because you only got three guys in a route. Well, now you're saying like, okay, we got to put another guy in the route because there's not enough windows to throw the ball to. Maybe you're getting picked off. Maybe you're just having incomplete passes. You're not moving the chains. So now you've got to take one of those blockers and you got to put them out in a route. Maybe you take two of those blockers and put them out in a route. And so now it's like, well, now you're no longer in a max protect. And now the whole chess match changes, right? So I would, if it was me, that's how I would start the game, is I would do a lot more zone. But the question, Justin, is how much have they been working on zone? You know, last year they employed it much more consistently than they did in 2018, 2017, and 2016 under Don Brown, but it still wasn't a ton. And from everything we've been told, is that they didn't spend a lot of time in preseason practice really, really developing a zone. And when you have a mentality as a man coach, and this is what we do well, it's hard to like then be really great at something else. They're not a 50-50 defense. And so I just wonder if they do drop in a zone, if they're going to be good at this.
Yeah. I mean, how everyone wants Michigan to adjust and Don Brown to adjust on defense, but it's different. It's not that easy just to say, all right, yes, we're going to start running this, this brand new defense in week three, you know, that we haven't practiced yet. So people obviously want change and, you know, we're in the same boat. We want adjustments, but it's not that simple. And when these guys have not had reps doing, you know, a certain coverage or a zone or whatever you want to call it, they're not going to be great at it. So you have to expect that there's going to be mistakes made as well. And right now, Don Brown, there's not a ton of room for that defense to make mistakes before the fan base and everyone else really, you know, starts turning on them, because they already have. Let me ask you this on the offensive side as well. The one bright spot of Michigan's offense, I mean, there's multiple, but one big one is they have not turned the ball over yet this year, which has been pretty crazy because we came into this year thinking Joe Milton has the arm, has everything, doesn't have the experience, so he is probably going to force the football a little bit and make some mistakes. But that hasn't happened. Obviously Michigan fumbled a couple times in the game against Minnesota, but they got him back. They've held onto the ball pretty well. Do you see that continuing for Michigan, or do you think at some point Milton is going to make a mistake and force a football?
Well, he's already made a couple of mistakes. It's just that he's gotten away with it because he has such a powerful arm, and it's hard for defensive backs and linebackers that aren't ready, that aren't receivers, to catch a ball when it's unexpected and coming with that type of velocity. Yeah, I mean, is he going to have a perfect game? No, he's not going to have a perfect season. Nobody has a perfect season. Even the best quarterbacks, even Joe Burrow last year threw interceptions. So, yeah, I mean, at some point here, he's going to turn the ball over. It's, you know, that would be kind of like one of those X factors that in this game tomorrow is if they turn the ball over two or three times, you know, that makes it very difficult. But it's a little bit like last week. I think you asked me a question about whether there'll be a special teams touchdown. Like, I don't ever predict turnovers. Maybe if it's like really wet and bad conditions, which I don't think it's supposed to be in Bloomington tomorrow. It's kind of like the Midwest here. We're supposed to be gorgeous, but I don't ever predict turnovers because they're, you can't predict them. Like, you don't know when those are going to come, but certainly I expect at some point that they will for this Michigan offense. Two games in, you can get away with it. If we're four games in, then something really crazy is going here without a turnover. So Justin, some predictions for the game tomorrow. Looking at this, and we discussed Josh Gattis and does he have a better game? And so, you know, Joe Milton threw for 300 yards last week. He did it on 50 plus passes. He is the only quarterback in school history to have 50 plus passes and not have a touchdown pass in that game or an interception. Jake Sage, intern at Wolverine Digest, looked that up. And so that's a pretty interesting stat. But yeah, does this, you know, what does this offense look like tomorrow, do you think? I mean, is this a team that that has those big explosive plays? Like, where are you expecting the offense to come from? What are you expecting Joe Milton's game to look like tomorrow? What do you expect the running game to look like tomorrow?
I'm going to go ahead and say there, I think, unfortunately, because I don't think that this is going to bode well for Michigan, is they're going to have to pass the ball maybe not 50 times, but more than they want to, upwards of probably 30. And so they're going to be forced to, because I imagine that Indiana is going to try to do the same thing with this offensive line and really stuff these running backs at the line. And so I imagine that this offense is going to move the ball through the air. And I think Michigan will be able to do that. Obviously they were against Michigan State, just not as efficiently as they wanted to. But I think now that Milton he's getting more experienced. And so, like you said earlier in this week, he felt like he had happy feet against Michigan State. I think he feels a little bit more comfortable. And I think that he will end up, you know, completing more passes. I think he'll finally connect on a couple of those deep balls, and then he'll start to get into rhythm, because the first time that Joe Milton connects on a deep ball to Giles Jackson, this fan base may turn around right away. and it's going to be a glorious thing. And so I could see that happening this week, because they've probably been practicing it now to try and working with him to get some air under that ball. But I think that now all of a sudden they have felt some adversity. They now know what it feels like when they can't move the ball at will, like they did against Minnesota. And so with them being able to adjust to that and now respond to that adversity, I think they'll do a much better.
Yeah, I'm looking for this game. I mean, I don't really know, because I don't know if there's something, you know, significantly broken in this downfield passing game, or if it's just been that they haven't really tried that much. I mean, Minnesota, they tried twice. Michigan State, they tried twice. I mean, that's not a lot of attempts downfield. You know, I mean, you look at like Joe Burrow for LSU last year averaged, I think it was like 5.5 plays of 20 yards or more as a passer per game. And he was completing on passes of 20 yards or more, he was completing 56%. So that's, if you're doing the math here, he was throwing the ball about 9 or 10 times per game downfield. Michigan's doing it twice per game. Like, what the hell are they doing? Like, that's just asinine.
With a guy that has the best arm that they've had since Chad Henne, right?
Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt. So I guess Ryan Mallett had a pretty big arm, but he was right around the same time. They both left in 2007. So, you know, I think they're going to take their shots. I think everything will be better than it was last week. I really do. Again, because there's just no way that they come out here with the same vanilla game plan, try to run between the tackles. Like, it just can't happen. It just can't. And so I think we'll see an explosive offense tomorrow. More so probably in the running game. I'm just not sure about the passing game, honestly, Justin. I really don't know how to predict this one. What do we see? Do we see Joe Milton have 5 passes of you know, 30 yards or more? I don't know, man. Again, this is why this game is such a question mark game for me. In the secondary, you know, I think we're going to see Michael Penix Jr. And I think we're going to see Indiana have their success. Because these cornerbacks are weak, and because these safeties haven't proven to be in the right position yet. And unless they take Daxton Hill off the slot, which is a big question mark, do you take Dax Hill off the slot? Do you make him switch him with, you know, probably not with Brad Hawkins, because Brad Hawkins is incapable of guarding slot receivers. So do you have, you know, Hill and Brad Hawkins as your two deep safeties, and then you bring in, you know, a third cornerback as your nickelback? You know, maybe that's what you do. I know it was kind of my own question. And I kind of, when we talked about this, you know, pre-show, I was like, okay, this is, you know, let's look at it from this perspective. I don't know. I really don't know what we're going to see tomorrow. But I'm excited to see what that looks like.
Well,
and that kind of, yeah.
I was just going to say, it's the reason why you don't know what you're going to see is because we saw two completely different teams from week one to week two. So which one of those are you going to get? Right. And it was on both sides of the ball, really. So that's where I wonder, you know, what the heck is going to go on Saturday. And so I wanted to ask you this too. If Michigan does go out and win this football game on Saturday, they are now 2-1 with two ranked road wins. Indiana's the number 13 team in the country right now, which if you would have said, you know, obviously without Michigan State there, you know, that's a bad loss, but that's pretty good, you know, because Harbaugh has not done that, and this Michigan program has not won big games on the road. So where would you put this team as far as success? Is that a successful three-game stretch here, or
no.
Is that still not?
Well, I would say this. I mean, I think some of it depends on a little bit on who Michigan State really is. You know, if they go out there and beat Iowa this weekend and they're 2-1 and maybe they're 3-1 after next week, I just don't believe it. I don't think they're a good football team. I think that's going to show itself over the course of the season. You know, Michigan's win over Minnesota, you know, kind of coming to the year. If you just take the first three games, you're kind of saying like, okay, Michigan, if they're a legit Big Ten championship contender, should be 3-0. If they're still a year away, 2-1, and what is the game that they get that they lose? Probably at Minnesota to start, because Minnesota was the team that people were expecting a little more of. Instead, they get Minnesota and they get Indiana, but they lose to Michigan State at home. Is it a successful start? No, because you really should be 3-0. Like, it's great that you go out there on the road and you get those two road wins, and I won't take those away from Michigan, but you lost a game that you were favored by 25 points. Mm-hmm. And there's just there's nothing that you can do in, you know, even if you do get a chance to play Wisconsin next week, which we can mention here in a second, there's nothing that you can do until you get to Ohio State. And at that point, you've got to be undefeated going into Ohio State to erase losing to Michigan State, losing as a 25-point favorite, losing the second week of the year, losing to your rival and putting them back on it, even playing with you in Mel Tucker's first season, giving Jim Harbaugh a 3-3 record against Michigan State. I mean, I just, again, you'd have to beat Wisconsin. You'd have to beat Penn State. Both of them would need to be ranked teams. You got to beat Indiana this weekend. You got to go into Columbus, whatever that is, 6-1. And then you got to beat Ohio State to erase what happened in week two. Again, I'll give them credit if they go down there and beat Indiana, but it doesn't absolve them of that loss to Michigan State. Would you agree, or do you think it does?
I agree. I mean, obviously the Michigan State, it's not just going to wipe it away. Fans are going to remember that. And everyone is nobody's, you know, saying, all right, now that completely wipes it away. I think it does give them, it sets them up for a little bit of a momentum shift going into the rest of the season. And according to ESPN, Michigan's remaining schedule is the hardest of anybody in the country. So I think they need this, but at least it gets Michigan back on track to having what we would maybe call a successful season or moving in the right direction towards 2021, like we talked about. So I think it is a big game. I think it would be a big win. I think this Indiana team is different than they have been in the past. We talked to Paul Gable from Rivals last night. He's part of the Hoosier.com. And he said that in the past, Michigan has won this game because they had much better talent. Out of, you know, the first 20 guys were the same, but then the next 20 for Michigan were, you know, 10 times better, and Indiana didn't have that depth to hang with them for the full game. Now Indiana has some depth, and they are a much better, much more talented team, and so I think it's going to be a lot more difficult for Michigan to hang with them, or it's crazy to say hang with them, but to compete this weekend. But I think if they do, and if they come out and play well and beat Indiana, I think it's a pretty big statement win for this program after obviously a tough loss last week. So I guess we can go right into our predictions for what you think you're going to see this, how this game turns out for this weekend.
Yeah, well, before we do that, I'd love to mention, you know, we've got great sponsors. You heard from our friend Jacob Cooper of Kapnick Insurance Group earlier on the podcast. Our friends at Lewis Jewelers, where Ann Arbor gets engaged, lewisjewelers.com, Wolverine State Brewing Company, wolverinebeer.com to check out their menu, their carryout menu. You can pick up beers, their crowlers and growlers, or a four-pack or a six-pack when you visit them, order online. Our friends at Weber's Hotel and Restaurant here in Ann Arbor. You know, Thanksgiving, if you want to come into town and you're a little bit like, hey, you can't really stay with the whole family, but trying to figure something out, you know, Weber's Hotel here in Ann Arbor is a great option for you. Or coming in around Christmas time. We always, for Christmas, we always, you know, the Weber family is our family. And so we always go out to the Weber house, and then we spend the night at Weber's Hotel for usually Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. And it's just such a, you know, such a blast. And you've got the pool right there, you know, the great restaurants and outstanding, you know, rooms. And they've got blue, you know, these Bluetooth mirrors where you can hook up your phone, your music, right inside the bathroom there, and the rain showers. And I mean, it's a, they've really done a great job keeping that place up to date. It's an Ann Arbor institution, so you learn much more by going to webersannarbor.com. So prediction time, wow. I've said it all week, and I'm not changing. Michigan needs to win this game with their offense. You know, the idea that they're going to win this game like 28-24, just I don't buy it. I know that Indiana struggled to capitalize consistently against Penn State until late, like, you know, until they got to overtime, they weren't getting in the 30s. Last week they looked better against Rutgers. I think this is an Indiana team that probably puts up 35 points against Michigan, maybe more. Can Michigan score 42? Can Michigan score 45? I don't know the answer to that. At this point, they did against Minnesota, but they didn't do it with big explosive passing plays. They did it with a 70-yard touchdown run. They did it with a short field after a kickoff, after a, you know, weird kickoff return. They did it with a short field after a blocked punt, or a you know, fourth down punt that they went for. They did it with an interception return. I don't know that Michigan can score 42 points on offense. I think if I'm hedging my bets here, and Indiana is due, and I'm going to take the Hoosiers. 38-31 in this game tomorrow, and I hope I'm wrong. We'll certainly have a lot to talk about on Sunday with Will Heiniger on our post-game Stadium of Maine podcast, but that's where I'm at, Justin. So 38-31 Indiana, what is your prediction for the game?
So how I see this game going is it's going to be another battle between Indiana and Michigan, no different than it has been in the past. And I think it's going to come down to either the last drive or the last play or something like that. And so I see it panning out where Michigan wins a game that they're not supposed to. We're going to walk away from this game and say, oh, we really shouldn't have won that game. Michigan should not have won that game. And so I think that it ends up being 34-31 Michigan, but nobody's going to walk away saying, wow, Michigan really played well. Their offense is going to score, I think, because Indiana has given up a lot of points, even to Rutgers. They gave up 21. They gave up 35 to Penn State. So I think that they will be able to score, but I think the defense gives up some too. I think that this defense will at least make some changes in the second half. Don Brown's going to kind of get it together and be able to stop Michael Penix. So I think Michigan wins a close one, but I think that Michigan fans and us on Sunday will be talking about, wow, Michigan really escaped that one. So that's where I'm at for Saturday.
All right. Well, we will talk about it on Sunday with Will Heiniger. You can check out that podcast at wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter at Stadium Maine Pod, Justin Rowe 92 and Michael Spath ITH. Justin, I'm really looking forward to it. Tomorrow we're gonna pull the TV out. We've got you know, a smart TV. that we can put on the back deck. It's supposed to be about like 68 degrees or so by noon. We've got some fellow Michigan fans coming over that we're all going to social distance on the back deck and watch at least the first half. They've got a youngster just like we do, and probably be like a nap time right around halftime. But I'm really looking forward to it. The sun's supposed to be out. It's supposed to be a gorgeous day. You know, I'll have my bourbon ready to go in case you might need it. Yeah, I mean, it's either for drowning sorrows or it's for a celebratory drink, right? So
it works both ways.
Looking forward to that. Yeah, it does. It does. You know, I'll have that out. I've got a couple of Wolverine massacres here from our friends. You know, that's more like if things start going really south, that's when you start drinking that, because that's like 12 or 14% alcohol. And that just kind of numbs all the pain away. But certainly, you know, I not suggest like you should just do that, but you know, when you're at home, you're not going anywhere. You can have a little bit more leeway there. So yeah, do it safely. Absolutely. So Justin, wish you a great Friday night here, and hope you enjoy your Saturday, and look forward to chatting with you and chatting with our audience and chatting with Will on Sunday morning.
Thanks, Mike. We'll see you all on Sunday.
This is the Stadium and Main podcast, presented by Kapnick Insurance Group, Wolverine State Brewing Company, and Lewis Jewelers.